Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. You know how we call the President of the United States the leader of the free world? Well, after last night's address to Congress, maybe we have to change that.
My job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America.
For all the press the speech is getting for having a kinder, gentler tone, I'm just going to start this morning by saying honestly that what I heard last night was another Donald Trump, Steve Bannon nationalist speech in which he also pulled back from some hints of policy that progressives and Democrats might like, sometimes in obvious ways, sometimes subtly. An example, even as he gave a wisp of a hint of being open to some kind of comprehensive immigration reform, he announced this with a broad flourish.
I have ordered the Department of Homeland Security to create an office to serve American victims. The office is called VOICE, Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. We are providing a voice to those who have been ignored by our media and silenced by special interests.
You could hear the Democrats groaning there. Usually when the president says something in a State of the Union-like address, his side of the aisle cheers and the other side of the aisle remains silent. Audible groans when he announced that new office and database dedicated to victims of crime by immigrants here illegally. No other data about immigrants of any kind. BuzzFeed points out that it's eerily similar to a column that Steve Bannon oversaw at Breitbart called Black Crime, which was only stories about crimes committed by black people. We'll play other clips from the speech as we go, as we welcome Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian, it's always great to be with you.
Your lead article today starts by noting what was not in the speech, which I guess was the kinder, gentler part, yes?
Well, you know, he did. President Trump definitely took a somewhat milder tone than he did in that inaugural address where he talked about American carnage. But I agree with you. This was a very consistent speech with the policies he's taken, and he continues to have a pretty dystopian view of where we are in the United States today.
Let me play the fuller version of the clip that I started with, the not the leader of the free world clip.
Free nations are the best vehicle for expressing the will of the people, and America respects the right of all nations to chart their own path. My job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America.
So what was he getting at there? My job is not to represent the world. It's the opposite of what I think we've heard from every other president in our lifetimes.
That's right. And especially from recent Republican presidents who have talked about the U.S. role in the world as the leader of the free world, standing up for democracy, standing up against tyranny. He outlined a much more limited role for the United States and for the American president in trying to bring about change in the world. He talked about forming new alliances when it's in our national interest. That seemed to be perhaps a nod to Russia, although he didn't actually say the word Russia in the speech, nor did he say the word Iraq or Syria. I mean, there are a series of big issues around the world that he didn't address. It was very much focused on a United States that needs to build a wall along the southern border, needs to be sure to keep out immigrants who might form a terrorist beachhead in the United States. And he described the U.S. economy as being in terrible shape, even though the fact is we're in the midst of a long recovery, a slow recovery, one that hasn't reached everybody, but a recovery nonetheless.
Was not my job to represent the world a nod to Putin without saying Putin? Was it a nod, in fact, to all the dictators of the world that we're going to leave you alone from now on, the opposite of Ronald Reagan, as long as you don't threaten us?
I'm not sure. I guess you could interpret it that way. I interpreted it more as my priorities are very much at home. I have an economic nationalist agenda that is focused on people in the United States. We don't see ourselves in the global stage, even on the economy or in security affairs that modern presidents have seen since World War II.
The new office and database for crimes committed by unauthorized immigrants, that clip we played, No one disagrees. I know you know this. Not Mayor de Blasio or anyone else who leads a sanctuary city, that violent criminals here illegally should be deported. Everyone already agrees about that. So what's the point?
Right. And in fact, that's been the policy of the Obama administration, to focus on deportation of illegal immigrants who have committed serious crimes. You know, we also know that immigrants have a lower rate of crime than do non-immigrants. But there are some celebrated cases of illegal immigrants murdering Americans, and he had two families. President Trump had two families invited to Melania Trump's box in the gallery, and he acknowledged them during the speech. This has been a theme that we heard through the campaign, and it gets a big reaction from his audience, and it's one of the justifications he gives for the hard line he's taking on immigration. You know, even though he talked apparently in a background lunch with TV anchors about being open to a comprehensive immigration reform package, if Democrats will compromise on that, and that's generally seen as including a path to legal status for illegal immigrants, he did not repeat that in his speech last night. That was one of the things we were really listening for.
He had made a big show of that, or the media really ran with it and saying, oh, maybe we're going to hear comprehensive immigration reform package, but then he didn't come out with it. Do you have the facts at your fingertips of how much immigrants commit crime compared to the native-born?
I don't, but I've read from reliable sources, including fact-check articles like factcheck.org, that immigrants have a lower crime rate than non-immigrants.
And I know I've read that in multiple sources. Maybe they should also publish a database on crimes by all immigrants compared to the rates of crimes by native-born Americans, but somehow I don't think he's going to propose that. Another thing that I found hardcore last night, and I'm reluctant to even bring it up because it was such an emotional moment and we don't want to do anything in any way to dishonor Ryan Owens, but it was the way he used that unbelievably emotional moment when the widow of Ryan Owens got that amazing ovation for her husband who died in the Yemen raid. Trump used it to portray the raid, which has been widely criticized as a failure, as a success. Listen.
I just spoke to our great General Mattis just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy.
Now that, despite just yesterday morning on Fox and Friends, him trying to blame Schiff or shift the blame for it being a failure.
Well, this was a mission that was started before I got here. This was something that was, they wanted to do. They came to see me. They explained what they wanted to do. The generals, who are very respected. My generals are the most respected that we've had in many decades, I believe. And they lost Ryan.
They lost Ryan. What was he doing there, Susan, in the morning and at night?
Well, obviously, this is an issue that I think concerns him. I mean, first of all, of course, as you said, Ryan Owens, we honor his service and his sacrifice, and we honor his widow, who got what I think was the evening's longest standing ovation last night, and appropriately so. But questioning whether the raid was wise and whether it resulted in usable intelligence, that does not dishonor him. That is separate from his sacrifice, although there's been an effort by the administration to make questioning the value of that operation with an attack on the men who served there, which I think is unfair to those who raise questions about whether it was a smart thing to do and whether it yielded the sort of intelligence that the Defense Department was seeking. I think this is an issue that's not quite over, because it was the first operation that we know of that President Trump ordered, and so it's something important to look at when we look at his leadership and also the leadership of his national security team.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, helping us listen to and understand some of the moments from the president's speech before Congress last night. Help me contrast two moments from the speech that left me confused. He said this about our wars in the Middle East.
America has spent approximately $6 trillion in the Middle East. All the while, our infrastructure at home is crumbling. With the $6 trillion, we could have rebuilt our country twice, and maybe even three times if we had people who had the ability to negotiate.
But he also said this about spending going forward.
I am sending Congress a budget that rebuilds the military, eliminates the defense sequester, and calls for one of the largest increases in national defense spending in American history.
So help me out, Susan. Again, my premise this morning is that people are calling this a kinder, gentler speech. I'm hearing this as a consistent Steve Bannon, Donald Trump nationalist speech with pretty much everything they've done so far. How do those things fit together in his nationalist rebuilding, reducing spending on foreign wars, but massively building up the military?
Well, this is, I think President Trump's approach has been a strong military to defend the United States against the perils and threats from around the globe, and but not spending on some of the discretionary programs that have helped, for instance, cities that are struggling. And in fact, one of the things that is peculiar about the budget outline that the White House put out about 24 hours before the speech is the way it promises to protect Social Security and Medicare, the entitlement programs that are driving the increasing American deficit, while proposing deep cuts in almost everything else, from environmental protection to food stamps to the State Department program. And we found even Republicans, even Senate Republican leader, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who's been an ally of Trump on almost everything, warned yesterday that aspects of President Trump's budget are not going to go anywhere in the U.S. Senate. In some ways, one of the things I thought was notable about this speech was, unlike the inaugural address, Trump did seem to try to acknowledge that he's going to need a coalition in Congress to enact any of his big legislation. So he did talk about cooperation and working across party lines to some degree, but he did not moderate the actual positions and policies that he's promoting.
Yeah. And on infrastructure, which is one of the reaching across the aisle items, presumably, he made this proposal that also raised questions for me.
To launch our national rebuilding, I will be asking Congress to approve legislation that produces a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure of the United States, financed through both public and private capital, creating millions of new jobs.
So when he said financed through both public and private capital, was that a little bit of code? I mean, is that a real public works infrastructure program, roads, mass transit, waterworks, schools? Or when he says public and private, is it, as critics have suggested, just a green light to a lot of private pipelines and real estate developers?
Well, that's a big question, because if he wants Democratic support, it's going to involve a public investment. But the White House has talked about trying to use tax credits and other incentives for private investment on infrastructure projects, and that is something that is not acceptable to Democrats. So this is going to be one of the battles ahead. Actually, I think the White House is no longer promoting this $1 trillion infrastructure proposal as a first line priority. I think it's dropped a bit. It was interesting that he referred to it in his speech, because I think there's a sense now is they need to deal with the Affordable Care Act first, then they want to deal with a tax overhaul, and if they get through that, they'll get to infrastructure. And if they get to infrastructure, if and when they do, the question of how you finance it is going to be the critical one.
And we're going to run out of time in a minute, but I also want to get your take on two of the lines from his Obamacare section. This one, I thought, and as you know, I followed healthcare policy for so long, as have you, and I thought there might have been a sly broken promise in this line.
First, we should ensure that Americans with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage.
He said, have access
yes.
to coverage. He didn't say can't be denied. That's different than what's in Obamacare, where an insurer cannot take pre-existing conditions into account for the rate, right?
That's exactly right. And it's very hard to figure out how you can afford to continue the guarantee on pre-existing coverage unless you have something, either a single-payer system or something like the Affordable Care Act. That is a real problem for Republicans, and it's one of the reasons they're getting all this pushback at these big town hall meetings that have been pretty rowdy for some Republicans. Republicans are now promising access to coverage, not coverage. And that is a particularly critical distinction for the 27% of Americans who have some sort of pre-existing condition.
All right. Well, we're going to have to end it here. There are other things we could go through. So much policy in there. So much, you know, Trumpian nationalism in there. I'm unhappy when I see people getting lost in the kinder, gentler as the only thing that was going on, even though the tone was different than the inaugural address and his campaign speeches. A lot of things in there to follow up on, Susan, right?
We are completely on the same page, Brian.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.